This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 71, and I'm your host, Simon Bowen. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of a wider UFO phenomenon. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And every Thursday I release an episode called Paranormal Stories, and that has UFO cases as well as information on evidence of an afterlife. And if you want to hear the extended version of this interview, it's an extra 18 minutes, you need to join the Patreon campaign, where there are now over 70 episodes in the back catalogue. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. And this week I'm talking to Colin Saunders about his book, Triangular UFOs of the United Kingdom. In 1999, Colin and his family had a close encounter with a triangular craft. And he has a great background to be a witness. He's been an avionics design draftsman, working for companies including Messerschmitt, Airbus and Saab. Hi, Colin. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Hi, Simon. Thank you for inviting me. I've been looking forward to it.
So we're going to be talking about your book. It's called Triangular UFOs in the United Kingdom. One of the things you say in the book is you would describe yourself as a really good UFO witness. So why would that be? What's your background?
Okay. I say that because of my engineering background. I've spent all of my life as a draftsman, basically. So I've always drawn for a living. So I'm very good with geometry, and also I was an electronics draftsman. So it was on the technical side of drafting. But during my career, I did work in the aircraft industry. So as a young man, as only 21 years old, I went to Germany. I worked on the Airbus in Hamburg, spent a year there as an electrical draftsman. I also spent 2 years working for Saab Aerospace in Sweden, where I worked on the civilian aircraft. Spent a year working in the cockpit and a year working on the wings and the engines. Again, as a draftsman, drawing all the electrical components and wiring, etc. I also spent some time in New Zealand, so there's been quite a lot of long-haul flights across the years of my career. And quite importantly as well, I did do 1 year's contract working for Chevron Petroleum in Aberdeen. Now, I was based on shore in Aberdeen, and occasionally you would go offshore to do some drawings of what's been built, etc. And what you had to do was to make sure that when you was offshore, you got everything completely right. Because once you got back home, back to the office, you had to draw up what you'd seen, make notes of, and you can't go back, is the point. If you've forgotten something, if you made a mistake, you can't go back the next day. So it's drilled into you to make sure you get all the information correct first time round. That came invaluable when it came to seeing the UFO, seeing the triangle that night. As soon as I got back home, I started doing drawings of what I'd seen before the memory started to fade. I got my daughter to draw pictures as well. But having said that, over the years, it hasn't faded at all. It's as sharp in my mind as if it occurred yesterday. So basically, there's been a lot of engineering, a lot of aviation experience. And obviously, along the way, I've been to quite a few air shows, etc., both in Germany and the UK. So when it came to the night of the encounter, I think I was well placed to tell straight away it wasn't from this planet, and also to make records of it, and eventually to build some scale models of the object.
Was it when you were at Saab, your office window looked over the runway so you could watch aircraft coming and going all day?
It was, yeah. Yeah, that was quite an experience. We were right next to the hangar where we built the civilian aircraft, but not far away was the military side. But that was all underground. So all the jet fighters, the Viggen and the Vegan, and later on the Gripen, they're all made underneath out of a big factory carved out of rock, basically. But they would use the same runway that we were using, and they'd be taken off all day long, flying to different places to be painted in different colours, etc. Yeah, it was quite exciting watching those all day long. It was one of the best jobs I ever had, to be honest, probably the best job I ever had. When I came back to the UK for the birth of my daughter, I started working at Courtauld. I became a design office manager at a company called Amteco that make floor tiles. And during the course of working there, working on AutoCAD, I became AutoCAD User of the Year in 1992, so a little while ago. But it did show I had a lot of computer-aided design experience as well before the encounter. So what happened then? Unfortunately, I caught chickenpox off my daughter. I got a great job at Courtauld, but I became really ill. It turned into like post-viral fatigue syndrome, or in them days they called it ME. And I ended up losing my job. And through that, I started my own business eventually once I worked myself better than I was at the beginning of the problems. And I started my own business doing embroidery design. Now, this turned out to be a godsend because when I had the site in, I'd got people working for me. I'd built the business up and got some staff, and we're still working from home. But once I had the site in, I couldn't concentrate on work. So all I wanted to do was draw the craft and then make some models. And I was down the shed making models out of wood and doweling, etc., whilst the staff were running the business for me. So that worked out really well in the end. So it was when I was working at home with my newly formed business that the family had the encounter.
So how did the sighting start?
It started on the 31st of March, 1999. We'd been out for a bar meal at a small village in Warwickshire called Paleton, the White Lion at Paleton. There were two car loads. I was in the car, my wife was driving, and we got my mother-in-law. She was 72 that day, and we got my daughter with me as well. In the second vehicle, the Range Rover, we'd got my brother-in-law, his French partner, and her grandparents. So we all went to the White Lion, like I say, in Paleton, for the bar meal. So when we come to leave, I remember we got into the car, and as we pulled off, I looked around and I could see the old French lady struggling to get into the Range Rover. So we pulled off in front, and I was thinking, well, they'll soon catch us up along the way, especially as me brother-in-law just drive quite fast in his Range Rover. So we went through the country lanes, and we're getting excited. We're getting to the Foss Way. The Foss Way is an old Roman road. It leads up to the Watling Street, which is another Roman road, at a point called High Cross, which is about 2 or 3 miles from where we were going to join the Foss Way. So as we approached the Foss, somebody said, oh, we're turning onto the Foss Way now. And my daughter said, jokingly, oh, there's been talk of headless horsemen down here. And we all laughed and joked. We said, oh, we'll keep our eyes open. But as soon as we turned the corner onto the Foss Way, right in front of us, there were some lights hovering away by the side of the road, red and white, exactly half a mile away. So I went back and measured the distance the next day. And we was all excited. We were going, blimey, look at those. It's too many lights for a helicopter and too low for an airplane and things like that. What on earth can it be? So we drove towards the lights, all getting excited. And then we pulled up next to the lights. Now, the lights would be, I always say this, about 100 feet away. Now, I've steered my friend's narrowboat around the Aspen Canal, which is 70 foot long. So when I say 100 feet, I mean 100 feet. You could hit it with a cricket ball. It was that close. But at that point, it was just light. There was no craft to be seen. So at the back, there was 4 big red lights in a row, but they weren't straight to the earth. They were at an angle of about 30 degrees from the earth. And I could see another little red light off to one side as well. And I was thinking, you know, what's going on? There was a bit of mist mixed in with it as well, and there's some white light mingled in. The whole thing was just so bright. It was incredible to look at. And I remember staring at one of the lights, the fourth one, the one that was highest in the air with the big 4 red lights on the back. I called them lights, but they were big red objects. And I could see this like crisscross effect on the surface of the light itself, as though it was like a traffic light. But I don't think it was etched into the material. I think it was a byproduct of the light source, a bit like Newton's law of ring interference. So you can see this crisscross effect, but it was coming from some sort of red light that's coming out the back of these big 4 lights, not the back. Now, as I was staring at that, all of a sudden, the sky started to ripple around the lights. And I thought to myself, my word, there's something there. It's not just the lights on their own. There's actually something around the lights. And as soon as I thought that, this craft materialized and it became solid, metallic, just like that, just like Star Trek, decloaked in front of our eyes around the lights. And it was this triangle. And I'd say the wingspan at the bottom was probably the size of a bus, about 30 feet. And it then rose in the air, the nose rose up in the air. Now the rear of the craft stayed where it was and it pivoted from the rear of the craft. If it tilted from the middle of the craft, I think the bottom would have struck the ground, it was that low. So the rear of the craft stayed where it was and the nose floated up in the air like a submarine underwater. It was incredible to watch the movement. And like I say, and then it was this triangle and it looked like it was alive. It was incredible. You could see it had been manufactured, but it looked organic. The surface was covered in like a liquid. It looked like liquid running up and down the surface of the crater. On top of this, there was these silver beams that were interlocking like an old-fashioned maze in an English country garden. And as it rose up, I remember thinking, my God, aliens do exist. Abductions take place. And I got the feeling they've been around forever, and it explained all the mysteries from history that we'd had. And once it had come up in front of us, my wife decided to pull forward in the car and reverse into this gateway that was more or less underneath the craft. But as she pulled forward, this large hedge blocked the view. So I thought to myself, if it's going to go, it's going to go now. And sure enough, we reversed into the gateway. We jumped out of the car and it had gone. Just like that. Just when we couldn't see it, unfortunately. But as we stood there and looked around, in the distance, there was this large craft disappearing with four big red lights on the back of it. And it was massive. It was like the size of a football pitch. But this would be like half a mile or a mile away. It was difficult to say exactly how big, but it did look absolutely huge. And I remember saying, I didn't know anything about UFOs at all. Wasn't interested in the subject. So I said to him, I think the small craft changed into the big one that's going away over there. But once I started researching, I realised that was probably a mothership and maybe the small one went back to the mothership. So we then got back into the car. It was 9:50 p.m. and we drove home talking about what had happened. And my brother-in-law lived next door. He bought the house next door to my mother-in-law. So we took the mother-in-law home. And to our surprise, the Range Rover was already there. And all of the French people were out of the Range Rover and actually inside the house having a cup of tea. They'd obviously been back a few minutes before we got back. Now, generally speaking, is the nuts and bolts of the sighting. Now, I say the nuts and bolts because for the first 20 years of the sighting, I only ever talked about the nuts and bolts in public. But something more happened on that night. Something a bit more paranormal, if you like, which we'll come back to in a little while. It's nothing too amazing, what it was for me at the time. Because what I want to talk about next, if it's okay, is the models that I decided to make and what sort of path I took.
Did you feel at all that the occupants of the craft knew you were there watching them? It's like they realised you was there, so they decloaked.
Yes, I have to say this, they were waiting for us. It was like an ambush. They were all lit up like a Christmas tree. I mean, most people don't get to see a UFO. If they do see one, it can be at distance. This thing was totally different. It was waiting for us, and it was making sure that we'd seen it. Now, I say that as well because over the years, I've tried to figure out why the craft was at 30 degrees rather than flat to the Earth. And I was trying to think it was some sort of technical reason to do with the Earth's magnetic field and propulsion or something along those lines. But once again, by playing with the model one day, I figured it out. I think the reason it was tilted up at 30 degrees is it was tilted up towards us as we were driving towards it. So for that half a mile when we turned the corner, the craft had actually tilted up so that we could see the underneath, all the lights that were underneath, as well as the lights on the rear, because there was no craft there at the time. However, it was tilted towards us. So I think by doing that, it did expose more lights and make it more visible to us as we turned the corner. So I think there's intent there that shows intent. And wherever there's intent, there's a purpose behind it. That was a bit worrying when I've thought that was the reason they were tilted up. Now, the strange thing is, when we got back, I drew pictures of the triangle. My daughter, Victoria, she drew pictures as well with the beams on the surface. The next day, my mother-in-law talked about the beams on, she called them girders on the surface of the craft, but didn't do any drawings. But my wife, because she was driving, she saw the lights as she was driving towards them. But when the craft materialised, she was still looking at the road. She was still being sensible and looking out for traffic, which is why she then put the hazard flashes on, drove forward and reversed into a gateway. Now, when I asked her to do a drawing of what she'd seen, she drew three red lights in a perfect triangle. Now, I know the craft was tilted towards us, but it was also showing the rear lights at the back and a white light underneath. And there's no way we would have been able to see just three red lights. She didn't draw any white lights or anything, just three red lights in a perfect triangle. Equilateral triangle. Now, a few months later, I got her to do the same again, to draw what light she'd seen, and then she drew it again, three red lights in an equilateral triangle. So then I wondered if there was a possibility that as we were driving towards it, the small craft was intentionally making itself known by tilting up and having all the lights flashing away. And as we were staring at it, the large craft that we'd seen afterwards, once we got out of the car, possibly came overhead. So the small one was a distraction as a large one came over. And what my wife saw was the underneath of the mothership with three red lights in the corner. It's a possibility. I mean, we don't really know, but that small one was just going out of its way to make sure we'd seen it. It was just incredible. And like I say, I'm 100% convinced it was waiting for us, and it decloaked in front of us on purpose. And it decloaked when we'd stopped right next to it as we were staring at it. And the feeling was like meeting God. It was just wonderful. It was absolutely amazing.
As soon as the hedge got in the way and blocked your view, it left. So it must have known that your view was blocked.
That's right. Now, that's a good question, that, because I thought to myself, the actual words were, if it's going to go, now is a good time. Now I'm thinking, afterwards I was thinking, why would I think it was a good time? It's a bad time as far as I'm concerned, because we wanted to see more of it. In fact, me and the mother-in-law, we wanted to get on board. So that is a good question, and we will come back to that shortly, because right. That's tied in with something else that occurred. I think we're about at the point where we'll go back to that night of the encounter. Because like I say, for 20 years, I just talked about the nuts and bolts. Now, the craft that I've built, the models I've built, the top and bottom are grey, with the top's got a liquid surface on it, and they round over to a central white core that's probably, for instance, say, a foot thick, that goes all the way around the craft. So the top and the bottom stick on top of that. But where they join, there were no nuts and bolts, no rivets, no welding, no seams, nothing at all. Going back to the night of the encounter, this is what happened. And this is coming out more and more now, actually. I even seen this on the TV last night. They were talking about this on Blaze. What happened was, as the craft floated up in front of me, all of a sudden, it was like somebody got a pair of binoculars and put them in front of my eyes. I could see the craft really close up. All I could see was the interlocking beams on the surface. And that was like one view. And then there was another view, and that was the nose. The big round spherical nose, it was beautiful. The way it had been manufactured was incredible. But it was such a close view that I couldn't see the beams on the surface anymore. I was like just a few feet from the nose looking at it, or having that image. Then the third image, the third view I seen, was a side view. Now, this is where I seen the central white core and the top and the bottom that rolled over onto this central white core, where there was no welding and no seams, no rivets, nothing along those lines. Now, there's no way we could have seen that from where we were sitting in the car. We could only see the rear of the craft and the top of the craft as it floated up. But by seeing these extra views, that enabled me to build an exact replica of the craft. So we talked about this the next day, and I was saying, I got these close views, like, and I think I've had an out-of-body experience. I got so excited by it all. It was incredible. The whole thing just blew my mind. I've never seen anything like it before in my life. And you know straight away that it's not from this world. There's such a high strangeness involved with a close encounter. And it was so quiet afterwards as well. There was nothing else around. No traffic, no air traffic, no road traffic, no animals. You could hear a pin drop. So I got the idea I'd had an out-of-body experience. I then started trying to research that and trying to do it again, but it never really worked. And back in the old days, Graham Birdsall and Russell Callahan used to run the UFO magazine here in the UK, and they put on some fantastic conferences in Leeds. And I used to go to those. A lot of people used to go to those back in the day. And that's where I met Bud Hopkins, the late Bud Hopkins. He was there, and I managed to have about 30 seconds with him. That was all. There was a queue of people wanting to chat to him. So when I got my turn, I said, you know, Bob, I've had this close encounter, and I believe I've had an out-of-body experience because I've got all these three images, these three close views of the craft. And he said to me, no, that wasn't an out-of-body experience. He says, that was images placed in your mind by aliens on the craft. And once he'd said that, this woman butted in and started talking and showing him a crystal she'd found in the forest. And Bob, being a gentleman, was chatting to her, and that was the end of my 30 seconds. He didn't get a chance to expand on that, unfortunately. So I thought, that's a bit odd. I made a note of it, but I didn't take it fully on board. I was still clinging to the idea it might have been an out-of-body experience, which I found quite comforting, because if that was the case, it meant you could live without your body. And I took some sort of solace in that. But on the back burner, I wrote on a list of things to remember, basically, that Bob had said this to me. Now, what happened as well was I was starting to have some strange experiences after the UFO event. I've never had any before in my whole life. But afterwards, things started to go a bit weird. Like, it all started at home with some electrical problems that we had the next day. And then it carried on with lights in the sky, and I had an invisible creature, like a ghost, walk up to me whilst I was out fishing. All sorts of weird things. There was the one when I was fishing that really is the only time I've ever been frightened in all of this experience. I mean, the night when we were confronted with this craft, it was beautiful. It was like meeting God. It was just amazing. Even though I'm not religious, it was just felt right. But when I was down the river, I heard these footsteps coming across the field towards me. And it's quite a remote place. It's Rothley in Leicestershire. And I was fishing on the River Soar. So I decided I'd climb up the riverbank and see who was there, because I do know some of the farm workers go down there shooting. So I wanted to make sure they weren't going to shoot in my direction. I climbed up the riverbank and no one there, but the noise is continuing. There's four heavy footsteps, and they're walking towards me. And I'm thinking, my God, it's a big cat. It's coming for me. Like, I'm petrified. So I took a spike out of my rod holder for protection. And the only thing I could think of doing was, if it was a cat, was to go back down the riverbank and get it to jump on me and impale it on its own weight. And I stood there shaking. And whatever it was, it walked in front of me, but it was totally invisible. But it was making a lot of noise, four footsteps. And it went from left to right, and it could have only been 4 feet away. And as it passed, I sort of got a bit more brave, and I started shouting and clapping my hands. I got the stick and hitting the grass, see if anything would come out, but nothing moved. There was nothing there at all. And then it just faded away. So I stood there and I thought, that's not a big cat. A big cat wouldn't make noise. That's some sort of space-time contingency that you hear about. And that was the day, Simon, that I actually decided that, because I knew this had come from the UFO encounter, that the UFO had to be dimensional rather than extraterrestrial. If it had come from a zillion light years away and then disappeared, why was I having all this extra stuff afterwards? There was a connection. Something had happened. Had done something to my brain that night to make me have these other experiences. And the others, the three that was in the car, my mother-in-law, my wife, and my daughter, they were having nothing. They were having no experiences at all, just me. So I made a note of these. They're in the book. I put them in date order, the things that were going on. And what happened then was, out of the blue, I got an email from a guy in America. And it started off by saying, basically, just like you, I had three images placed in my mind when I had a close encounter with a triangle here in Connecticut. He'd never spoke to anybody else about it, but he got in touch with me. He'd seen me on the internet doing an interview with Richard Hall, where I talked about these extra images that I'd seen that I thought they were out of body. And he said his initial words were like, just like you, I had three images placed in my head. And they were like close-ups of the craft, the pipe work on the outside, some sort of lighting feature. And he thinks one of them might have been an internal view. And then, yeah, some of the weird things happened at the time. And it was like a eureka moment. I thought, you know, that's right. Bud Hopkins was right all along. They were images placed in my mind. Because I've been listening to a lot of David Jacobs stuff, who's interviewed a lot of abductees. Now, they talk about telepathy, and you hear about telepathy all the time. Now, in my naivety, I thought telepathy was a conversation of words between two people without actually opening your lips. But David Jacobs' abductees talk about images being placed in the mind. Now, that makes sense, doesn't it? Because like a picture paints 1,000 words. Without those three images that they placed in my mind, I would not have been able to build the craft. So that moment when I read that email, I thought, wow, I've had telepathy with an alien.
Yeah.
And that took some getting used to. And I thought, I'm not going to go down the pub and tell anybody about this. I think I'm absolutely crazy. Part of me does wonder, though, whether it was the craft itself, because even though it was metallic and all manufactured, it looked like it was alive, like it was organic. It was such a strange experience. Now, I think because of that obviously because of the telepathy, I think it did something to my brain that allowed all these other things to start coming in. So over the next 2 years, I had all sorts of paranormal activity. I had nothing prior to the UFO, so they're obviously all linked. And so that sort of then brings us up to the modern time, brings us up to date, if you like. What I decided to do with the large model was to go and do a presentation in Hull last year at the OLM conference. And I was chatting to a guy there, Philip Kinsella, and his brother Ronnie, two lovely gentlemen, and they were telling me about their experiences, paranormal experiences, etc. And Ronnie had his own experience with the triangle. Philip suggested that I write a book. I'd often wondered and thought about writing a book, and I thought I'd do it when I retire. Now, I'm not far off retirement, but I decided I'd write it now. After all, I'd collected a lot of information over the last 24 years, and I knew a lot of people. And on Facebook, I've got a lot of friends who have had triangle encounters. So I decided to write the book. The problem was I wrote about the engineering background and the family encounter and the models. But by that time, I'd only got like, I don't know, 10,000 or 15,000 words. But for a book, you need to have a lot more. You need like 70,000 words. So I decided then it was obvious I needed to pull in all the other people I'd chatted to and talk about their sightings, and then ask other people about sightings from social media, and also do some research from my old friend Omar Fowler. He's still got a lot of information up on the internet there. So I went through a lot of that, took a lot of his triangle sightings. I'd also done quite a few newspaper reports in my hometown of Hinckley in Leicestershire. And a lot of people had come back to me with their own sightings, which was great. And strangely enough, they were all triangles. I know my sighting in the paper was on triangles, but I invited people to talk about any craft they'd seen. But everybody basically talked about triangles, which was really interesting. So once I started asking people for reports on social media, I decided also to ask if they had any other paranormal experiences. And, you know, there were more people saying yes than there were saying no. But it does seem like a lot of people have paranormal experiences when they're young and have them through their early life, and it sort of culminates in a UFO encounter. Whereas mine seems to be the other way around. It started off with a UFO encounter, but then went on to have other experiences afterwards. But the encouraging thing was that more people were saying yes, they've had experiences than no, to the point where I decided to dedicate a whole chapter of the book to people who have had these other experiences. It's becoming more and more mainstream now in the UFO circles that this is what's happening. You know, if I'd have said this 24 years ago, I think people might have thought it was a bit crazy. But like I was saying, even last night on Blaze TV here in the UK, there was a new UFO program I haven't seen before. And they were talking about this fact that people who have encounters, close encounters with UFOs, go on to have other experiences. And they call it the hitchhiker effect. So it's starting to become recognized now. And I'm glad that I'm one of the first people to put it into my book, that there is a connection between UFOs and the paranormal. I firmly believe that's because of dimensional. If it was, like I say, if it was purely extraterrestrial, I wouldn't be carrying on to have these other experiences. And the same with everybody else who talks about seeing ghosts as well as seeing UFOs. They're all connected, so it's got to be some sort of dimensional connection.
I interview people for the Past Lives podcast, and a lot of them had near-death experiences or research near-death experiences. And they've noticed that the after effects of a near-death experience, like you're talking about the paranormal after effects of a UFO sighting, they're the same. People have the same things happening. And it's almost like you could see that connection. They've had that near-death experience where you might say their consciousness was outside their body, and that linked them through to this other dimension, like the way you got linked through to another dimension through the UFO.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? But it's true. I found it a bit astounding myself when it first started occurring. But yeah, I've read quite a few of those near-death experiences and watched some of the videos on YouTube. And it's amazing. People all saying the same sort of thing, you know, that they do have this other experience when they have a near-death experience. And I think it's being recognised by the medical profession as well these days. Yeah, there's a lot. I think that's probably why our governments are not really telling us what's going on. Maybe they don't understand it fully themselves. Or it may be that complex that once we know, you know, just things are going to change totally here on the planet Earth. I really don't know. But it's certainly not just a case of nuts and bolts, otherwise they might have done it by now.
Well, I interviewed a guy called Malcolm Robinson recently, and he was he's a Scottish UFO investigator, and he'd written a book about something that happened in Fife, and these people in a car saw a triangular UFO, and they got out the car. And they could see these ETs on the field beneath this triangle. And that lady said she got a really good close-up view of them, these ETs. And then she thought, hang on a second, they were a couple of hundred yards away. And it's just like you describe. It's almost like she said she had really powerful binoculars. And for some reason, she got a real close-up view of them, which was impossible from where she was standing.
Yeah, I know Malcolm, actually. We did attend a conference in America together. Few years back over at Laughlin in Nevada. Yeah, I've heard of triangular UFO encounters in Scotland. I've not heard of that actual one about the she was seeing them close up across the field. But I have heard other stories like that. I did a presentation in Birmingham. Dave Holdren told me about some guys who'd seen a UFO land, and they were standing at a gate, and the UFO was quite a distance away, you know, over this large field, over And these guys got out, and then all of a sudden he said the guy's face was in front of his face, this alien with a blue mask on, and he was actually talking to him telepathically, but telling him to clear off in no uncertain terms as well, saying you shouldn't be here. But he said again that was really freaky, because not only was he telling him to clear off with some choice words, but he projected his face across the field at him. And it's funny enough, after Dave told me about that, because I talked about the close viewing, it was about 2 weeks later, I mean, coincidences happen, that the guy in America got in touch, the one that said, you know, you've had images placed in your mind. So there was almost like a little lead up to it with Dave talking about this guy seeing an alien across the field and it was right in front of his face. And then this guy getting in touch 2 weeks later to say the same thing. And yeah, another person, there's two other people in the book that I talk about who had that happen to them. And one's quite an in-depth report, and that's a guy who lives in New Zealand now. His name's Rob Fowler. He had a close encounter with a triangle, and it's really odd. He got in touch with me because of my close viewing. So Rob, he was in the UK. Him and his friend had seen this rugby ball-shaped object, like yourself, within about 100 feet. They chased it in the car, and they followed it, and they got down to this lay-by somewhere, and they lost track of the rugby ball-shaped ball of light that had gone. And he said in the car park, in the lay-by, there was a Volkswagen camper van with a concertina roof. And he walked past it to go and see if he could see the UFO at the end of the road. And he heard his mate saying, no, don't do it, Dave. And he said he turned round, or Rob turned round, and he said the camper van had suddenly had changed. He said it was like a triangle-shaped craft. It was like an F-117 fighter, like a stealth fighter, that was just sitting there instead of the Volkswagen camper van. And so then the next thing he knows is he's next to it and he's got a close view of it. And then he's got another close view of the nose and a close view of the underneath. But the strange thing he said, and I believe everybody who's put entries into the book, I've got no reason to disbelieve them. I don't think anybody's making any of this up. But he said that when he was standing next to the craft at the front, at the nose, he got the impression it was sniffing him. The craft. But he said he'd got this liquid surface with these girders on top of it. And he said he put his hand into the liquid. Well, that just blew my mind. I thought, it's just incredible. How can he manage to do that? And he said once he put his hand into it, it just went fizz, boom, bang, and it had gone. And he said there were three white lights disappearing in the sky. So people have some weird experiences with these UFOs.
You say that, you know, the surface was like liquid in some way, and you thought like the craft was alive. Is that an instinctive thing, like your intuition? Or did you get something else, like maybe a slight kind of telepathic connection?
Yeah, it's difficult to say because there were three things that came into my mind straight away. Aliens exist, abductions take place, and this explains things in history. And they just sort of came to me. Now, whether I thought them myself or whether I was helped along the way just before we got the close view in. And it's strange because there were three thoughts. And I've noticed there were three images. And the guy in America said that he had three images. Three seems to be the lucky number for some reason. Well, now what I was going to say earlier, actually, that once my wife drove forward and blocked the view, and I said to myself, if it's going to go, now would be a good time. That's crossed my mind, though, over the years, whether we were still connected. You know, they've done the telepathy on the images of the craft so I could build the model. I believe that's why they did it. Excuse me. And then was they still connected when I said, now's a good time to clear off? Because they did. And to be honest, it wasn't a good time. It was a good time for them, but not for me. I wanted to see more of them. Like I say, me and my mother-in-law wanted to get on board.
And do you think it was weird that the other people got back to the house before you? Would they have used the same route as you?
Oh, yeah, exactly the same route. And they couldn't have been far behind us. So I'm surprised they didn't see the craft when they turned the corner. We're surmising that they went past when we were in the gateway. But again, we got the hazard flashes on and it wasn't a deep gateway. So you would have been visible from the road as they went past. And I'm sure he would have been looking for us. So sort of tied in with this is the next day I went back and decided to measure the distance. You know, I was so excited. I had to go back and have a look. The distance was exactly half a mile from when we turned off a little country lane onto the Foss Way. Now, the thing I noticed, as soon as I turned onto the Foss Way, there's no way we could have saw it because there were trees and hedges and things in the way. And I thought to myself, that's really weird. It's like the scenery was different. Now, a couple of weeks later, my wife, who didn't see the craft materialise, just saw the lights, she'd been to pick a friend of ours up from the airport. And on the way back, she decided to come down the Foss Way and show Ruby where we'd seen the lights, where me and her mother had seen the craft and where Karen had seen the lights herself. And when she came home, she said to me, do you know, it's really strange. I've just took Ruby up the Foss Way and I would say it looks different from what it did that night. She said, I think the scenery was different. She said, I don't see how we could have seen it. And she's a very logical person. So that was two of us saying the same thing. Is there a slight chance that when that craft was materialising from another dimension or wherever it was coming from, that we were somehow caught up into that? I don't know how it occurred, but I do know as soon as we turned that corner, all four of us saw the lights. But you go back the next day and you can't figure out how you would have seen the lights. So that was very intriguing.
And the people, they got home before you, but it's not like you were an hour late or something. It was just a few minutes.
Just a few minutes, yeah. Unfortunately, we don't know what time we left the pub. So we don't know if we lost 5 or 10 minutes. If we did lose any time, it would be very minimal. I don't think we lost any time. But from what I've researched over the years, what I've read, you know, they can wipe your mind clear of any event if they want to. So anything could have took place over the 5 or 10 minutes that we were there. But I have a feeling that nothing did. We were just shown the craft. And in particular, I was shown great detail of the craft. And I can only think that's to build the model, you know, what I've built today. I believe it's one of the few in existence of a genuine ET craft. And I say it's genuine ET. I knew it was on the night, but then the other paranormal things that happened afterwards just sort of confirmed, you know, what I already knew. It was not from this world. It's been quite a roller coaster, really.
Yeah. And you've got all these other sightings in the book from your local area. And the one of the things that springs to mind is, why would they be doing that? If they've got these massive crafts, some of them the size of a football pitch, and they just gently float over people at 100 feet and then just shoot off. It makes you think, why would they do that? Why would they show themselves to people?
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? Because they don't show themselves to a lot of people. They just pick individuals. There's a guy, Al Orton, he got in touch with me through the newspaper. Now, he had his sighting, amazingly enough, 2 weeks prior to our sighting in a village called Charnford. Now, where he saw the craft near Bumblebee Lane is literally, I think it's 6 miles from where we saw our triangle. And Midway would be the high cross, the junction of the Foss Way and the Watling Street. So very close, really, in terms of wherever these things have come from. But he's a lorry driver, so he was driving to work 3 a.m. And he came to Bumblebee Lane. He said there was this triangular-shaped craft in the field. And he said it was the size of a football pitch. And it was just about a hedge height, so he could just see underneath it as well as see the surface of it. And he said it was absolutely massive. And one of the things that struck him, because he stopped his car and he got out, which is very brave, on his own, and walked up to it. He said, massive. And he said it wasn't moving a millimetre or a thousandth of an inch. It was just hanging like a picture in the air. He said just it was incredible to see. And he said the lights underneath in the corners, they were reversed to our lights. You often see that. There was a red light in the middle and 3 white lights in the corner, whereas I believe ours had a white light in the middle and three red lights in the corner. But he said he stood there and he then got a bit frightened and he decided to get back into his car and drive off. And he said he could see it in the rearview mirror as he drove to work. And he got to work and he hadn't lost any time. He was at work on time. He couldn't believe what he'd seen. And that was just 2 weeks prior to us seeing our sighting down the Foss Way, not far away. Now, strangely enough, Mal's granddad had a sighting in the village of Charnford a few years prior to that, at the bottom of his field. He's at the bottom of his garden, backed onto farmer's fields. And one night he saw some lights in the bottom of his garden. He thought it was a tractor. But when he went down, it was a triangle. And he said it was spewing out all bits of gold paper as it just vanished in front of him, but it probably cloaked itself somehow. That is an odd thing, actually, while we're thinking about that. It does run in families a lot. I mean, that night in the car, there was me, my wife, my daughter, and my mother-in-law. So, like, 4 generations in there. And they often say that these things run in families for some reason.
And what about this guy? Is his name Keith? And he saw a really large triangle at about 100 feet, but he had an hour and a half of missing time.
He did, yeah. I've met Keith a few times. I've put his encounter into the book. He was, I think back in the 70s, he was cycling from, motorcycling from Nuneaton to Hinckley. Now, on the journey, it brings you past a building called Transco. Used to be British Gas. It's the main control centre, used to be. But for the UK, and there's also a large antenna array there, one of the biggest I've seen inside a town. It's got all sorts of dishes on top of that. Now, as he came up Coventry Road from the Nuneaton, he noticed there were some coloured balls of light flying along with him, which he thought was really odd, like red and blue. And as he got up to Transco, he said his motorbike stopped, packed up. And he stood there, straddled the motorbike, and he looked up, and this triangle came over the Transco building and the antenna ray, which is right next to it. And he initially said it was the size of a football pitch, and then he corrected himself and said, no, it was one and a third times the size of a football pitch. He said it was massive and it was silent. He says as it passed over, there was a glass dome underneath about a third of the way down, but he couldn't see anybody inside it, and it glided off over Hinckley Town Centre. Right, and he'd left his girlfriend's at something like midnight. And then when he got in home, it's only a 10-minute journey, it was gone 1:30. So he woke his parents up and told them what had happened. They confirmed the time was right, and he'd lost 1.5 hours. And to this day, he doesn't know what happened to it. Like, he was just coming home, stopped for a few seconds, saw this craft come over him, and 1.5 hours of time disappeared. But you do come across that in the book. There are quite a few people who have had missing time. It doesn't necessarily mean they've been abducted. Everybody thinks that's the case, but it's not always. Maybe that's a clue to where these travellers are from. Maybe time somehow mixed in with these craft, some sort of time dilation. Not necessarily time travellers, but they might be using time and space somehow. I don't know. But like I always say, it's a science that we don't really understand yet.
And with the paranormal stuff as well, did you say in the book that you and your wife had the same UFO dream on the same night?
Yeah, that's spooky, that is. I've not talked about that before on podcast, but it is in the book. Yeah. So basically what happened, I had a dream that I've had dreams all my life. Oh, and I always remember them. They're always vivid and colour and detailed, amazing. Like, but I've never made anything of them. They're just your brain scrambling stuff during your sleep. But my wife, in all the time we were together, she never, ever remembered a dream and never talked about dreams ever. So this particular night, I had a dream. There was a UFO over the house and I could hear an alien coming down the roof. You could hear him on the tiles, the roof tiles. And then I dreamt, because we was in separate rooms at this time. And I dreamt my wife came into the room, into my bedroom, and come and sat on the bed next to me. And as we were sitting there looking at the window, this alien came through with a silver rod in his left hand. And he came towards me, he looked like an Egyptian. And he come towards me, as though it was just a silhouette. He got the hairstyle of an Egyptian, if you know what I mean. And I started screaming. So I thought he was going to attack me with a hammer. So I woke up. And in real life, I'm screaming my head off inside the house. My wife's got her own bedroom. My daughter's got her bedroom. Nobody woke up. And I just thought, wow, that was a horrible dream. And then just went back to sleep. Now, when I got up in the morning and walked downstairs, my wife was already up. Now, this is a lady in the 30 years we were together, never, ever remembered a dream. And without me saying a word, she says, oh, I had a funny dream last night. She says, I dreamt there was a UFO over the house. And that I was walking from room to room looking for our daughter, Victoria. I goes, wow, that is incredible. I've had the same dream. I dreamt the UFO was over the house and you walked through the door and come sat next to me on the bed as the alien came through the window. I thought, that is so odd, isn't it? How do you share a dream?
Yeah.
I've told that to some people and they go, oh, that was probably a weird event, but I don't know. Is it, we don't really know any of the answers to what's going on because it's so blooming weird. Could it be because I've had some telepathy in the past? Have I managed to put my telepathy out there during the dream and managed to plug into my wife and give her the same dream through telepathy? It's a possibility. Either that or it's a hell of a coincidence or it's a real event.
Yeah, and it's a scary thing to think about if it was a real event.
Yes, yeah. Because although my daughter was only 12 at the time, she was producing eggs. She was menstruating. So was there a possibility? I mean, one researcher told me they was after my daughter, and that really frightened me, to be honest. I don't think people should say things that to you. He's quite a famous researcher as well. I won't say his name, but it scared the life out of me.
And I wanted to ask you as well about a lady called, is it Lynn Lodge? And she had an encounter with men in black.
She did, yes. Now, she's a local lady who got in touch because she'd seen the triangle. And she works, or used to work, in a hospital where, just looking for it in the book, actually. She used to work in a mental hospital, Carlton Hayes, it was called. She says she said she'd been on a motorbike and she stopped to have a look at this object. I'll just read it from the book, actually. She says, a low rectangular shape ran the entire length of the fuselage with a central circular shape. There were lights emitting from each corner, very white, and it was at breakneck speed heading away from Ratby. There was a slight raised area as if it was a cockpit. I stood and watched it move into the distance. Excited, I got back onto my bike and raced down the hill into Main Street, turning into the Plough Inn. I used a telephone booth to call the operator. And then she goes to work and she says, my room looked over reception and the driveway sweeping round an island. Indeed, two men in black suits wearing bowler hats got out of a car. And more surprisingly was when there was a knock on my door. It was the same two men. They had been shown to my room and they were introduced themselves as being from the MOD. They asked me to recollect my account, including drawings, as many detailed sketches as I could. They said I should not discuss this with anyone and that there had been other witnesses over Leicester. I was shocked but felt a little worried as I'd already put an account in the English Times newspaper. I didn't tell them that though. I seem to have a natural ability to look up and there it is, an object, often a plane. I've captured such phenomenon which I've sent to MUFON with the original account. It's quite amazing. Like, she sent me lots of pictures. She keeps catching these objects even today. And one of the strange things about that, her husband, they must have separated at some point, lived at 25 St. George's Avenue and I lived at 21 St. George's Avenue. Two doors away, never knew it. Like, incredible you find that out after all these years. But yeah, so Lynn, she's had ongoing encounters. She's still having encounters now, if you like. She's seeing things in the sky and taking pictures. And yes, she did have a visit from two men in black suits and bowler hats. But they did sound like they were from the ministry rather than from the aliens themselves.
Right, okay. All right. It's interesting though, isn't it?
It is, yeah, yeah. It's interesting that she says that she'd already put the account in the Hinkley Times, so it was a bit late to keep quiet about it.
Yeah. So when you saw this triangle, you weren't scared and you said you wanted to get on board. Do you think that that was some kind of telepathic influence from the ETs?
Possibly, yeah. I've often thought about that. I mean, it's odd, but it felt so right. I mean, when the thing lifted up in front of us, you'd think your instincts would be to be frightened to death and try and get away. But it wasn't. It was like, wow, look at this. And it was more than that. It was like a feeling of love. I just thought, wow, this is incredible. There was no panic, no fear whatsoever. And my mother-in-law as well, she was the same. I'm sure we would have got on board without question. And I say that as well because, you know, my mother-in-law, she was 72 that day. Now, she passed away during COVID, not from COVID, but she passed away of old age. And when they cleared out her bedroom, bottom of the wardrobe, all these newspaper cuttings of paranormal happenings that she's been collecting over the years. Now, I've got them all here. I'll have a read through them all when I've got more time, probably when I retire. So obviously, my mother-in-law has been involved with the paranormal, but kept it quiet. Nobody knew at all anything about this. So that night, she must have been really quite excited. She must have been in tune with it. And the both of us were so ready and willing to get on board. Honestly, we were. But I think my wife and my daughter were a little bit perplexed. They weren't so keen to get on board.
Yeah, because we hear about these things in people who claim they're abducted, that it's almost like they're terrified, but then suddenly like a switch is switched in their head and all the terror goes and they just feel quite happy.
You do hear that, yes, you do hear that a lot, actually. They seem to be very good at controlling us, don't they? They know us better than we know ourselves.
It may be a thing, though, that if you could learn how to fight back. Fight back sounds a bit aggressive. It might not be that they're here to do anything bad to you, but they need to control us because we do fight back.
Yeah, I know. That's right. I do wonder why they're here. One of my concerns would be, although my own experience, I have to say, somebody asked me this, has been positive. I felt nothing but love that night. Everything I experienced since then has been great, apart from the creature down at the river that scared me to death. But once I knew what it was, I felt quite comfortable, funnily enough. I'd rather have a paranormal than a big cat. The fact that the majority of aliens keep it hidden from mankind, what's going on. But certain individuals, they show everything. But by and large, the general populace is not being told the truth. That's both from the aliens and from the government. Now, if the government's keeping it from us and the aliens are keeping it from us as well, that makes me suspect that it's not good, that if we knew what was going on, we wouldn't be very happy about it. Now, if you ask me what I think it's all about, I'll go with David Jacob on this. I firmly believe that there's a human-alien hybrid program going on. Otherwise, they wouldn't be taking all the sperm and the eggs that they have done over the years. And it's been going on for a long time now. So whether the project's coming towards the end or not, I don't know. But they're talking about trying to basically create a hybrid race that looks very much like us, but more sympathetic to the alien agenda and more sympathetic to the planet, I guess. And once they start mingling with us, we probably won't be able to tell one from the other. But, yeah, there is a possibility that they can control us. And it's going to sound crazy, I guess, to some people that's might happen. But there's something happening. I think there's something big happening. But I might be totally wrong. They might be creating hybrids and taking them to another dimension to do something. I don't know. Who knows what they're up to? But the fact that we don't know, and I'm not sure if the governments actually really know, they know something's afoot, but they're keeping it from us, is a bit concerning.
So, Colin, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. Can you tell us where we can get the book?
It's out there on Amazon on hardback, soft, or paperback. And also it's on Kindle and audio as well, available on Amazon, Triangle UFOs of the United Kingdom.
It's been great talking to you. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. It's great. It's nice to chat about this. it's always good to talk to the converted, if you know what I mean. It's nice to talk to people who understand what I'm talking about and won't just poo-poo it, you know, and say, oh, no, can't be right, it's crazy.
Yeah. It's like that thing I've had talking about the sighting I had. People think they know better than me what I saw. They weren't there, but they take it for granted I'm wrong and they're right. How could they know?
That's right. I find it really annoying, ever so annoying when people do that to me. It's just, yeah, gets my back up a bit. But, yeah, I've experienced it that many times over the years. I just ignore it now.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. I've enjoyed it. It's been great.
And that was an interview with Colin Saunders about his book, Triangular UFOs of the United Kingdom. And if you want to hear the rest of this fascinating interview, you'll need to sign up to Patreon for the extended episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. If you join the $4.50 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. And if you join the $7.50 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. And when you join up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Past Lives Podcast. There are over 260 episodes. On the Past Lives Podcast, I look into evidence for an afterlife, such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. And I also release an extra episode of Past Lives Podcast every Thursday called Paranormal Stories. And my website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. My Instagram is Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. And there's that idea that the ETs might have been interfering with evolution for thousands of years. And so we are the product of their program that they've had running that long, and maybe they're just halfway through it.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's quite likely we're some sort of an experiment. I'm sure they've been around for a long, long time. I mean, the earliest report that I've got of a triangle actually is from 1561. Now, that's quite a long time ago.